Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
A couple of months ago, I had the privilege to meet with Tom Allen and his brother Ben of the film project Janipar. And this is a film that he's been working on for some time that encapsulates his journey around the world from continent to continent on a bicycle. We met up at the waterfront in downtown Portland, Oregon to talk about his trip, his film project, and the trip he's currently taking now with his brother Ben down the west coast of the United States.
So this is the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock, and I had the chance, pleasure to meet with Tom Allen from, where are you from again?
I'm from England, small town England.
Excellent. So small that no one would recognize the town name if you spoke it.
Yeah, and there's many, many little villages with the same name, so.
Okay, there you go. Same thing in the States. So, Sure. Anyways, you've done many remarkable things on a bicycle, and it was yesterday, I think, that I learned about your film, Janipar. Am I saying that right?
Yep, that's right, Janipar. That's
okay. Right. And it looks to be fantastic. We can talk a little bit more about that later. But I tweeted, I think, that link out to the people that were following the podcast. And you got in touch just like, hey, we're in town. We happen to be here, and we'll be here for like another 24 hours. So it's a happy circumstance that we ended up meeting and talking. So maybe you want to talk about the film first and what that's all about?
Sure, yeah. Quite happy to do that. So the film is quite difficult to explain quickly. So I'll do my best anyway. It's the culmination of about 5 years of filming and production and post-production by myself and by a good friend of mine who's a producer-director for the BBC. So approximately four years of filming of the trips that I did when I was on the roads. I started travelling in 2007, and the original aim was to make a film about a round-the-world bike ride, full circumnavigation. And so that was the reason I set off with a video camera. To cut a very, very, very long and complicated story short, I never did manage to get the whole way around the world, because after several months of travelling, I met a girl. That whole thing made me kind of reassess what I was doing, what my motivations were behind it all, and the reasons that I wanted to get on the road and see the world, and all that kind of stuff, basically. So I had a lot of I was forced to think about what I was doing, and I decided that actually what I wanted to do was just kind of explore more organically, learn more about the world in my own way, not having this kind of big mission that everybody was talking, had heard about behind it all, which is very convenient because it means I could explain like what I was doing in one sentence. I'm cycling around the world, but it didn't fit with my actual reasoning for wanting to be a traveller. So I kind of cancelled all of that and went off and explored on my own terms for a while. Yeah. And the film is essentially that story from leaving as a very, very naive kind of young man, fresh out of university, all that kind of thing, with all these big kind of ideas and a pretty big ego behind it all, to kind of hopefully having matured a little bit, learnt a little bit more about myself and about the world, and having, met the love of my life. And I won't spoil the story too much, but there was a very happy ending to it all.
That's good. Yeah, that's the biggest question I think that arises when I watch the trailer. I was like, so what happens? And of course, that's the draw for the film. So sure. What, like you say, we won't spoil that for anybody. But yeah, I like the idea that you started out kind of saying, oh, I'm going to do this big thing, and it was all maybe structured and planned. Did you do much planning? Like, did you have a big plan that you had to abandon when you decided to go more organic on the whole experience?
Yeah, I'd done a lot of planning. It wasn't just me to start with. It was me and two of my buddies. One of whom was going to be in it for the long haul kind of thing. He was going to do the whole thing with me. It was going to be a team effort. We had a route planned out. We spent a year researching bikes, building the bikes, getting sponsorship, all that kind of stuff. And so when it did come to the crunch point, when I had to abandon all of that, it was quite a lot of stuff to deconstruct. There were quite a lot of expectations that I had to kind of go back on. A lot of obligations that I had to sponsors and to people that I'd told that I was doing this thing, which I had to say, look, I'm sorry, but this is not actually what I want to be doing right now. So it was very, very difficult. It took a lot of kind of soul searching. It took a lot of time. And my biggest regret, not my only regret, is that I made all those big plans in the first place, and I didn't just set off and, you know, leave it open and organic and, you know, all that kind of stuff from the start. But then I had to go through that process to realise. So
yeah, and
at
it looks,
the same time, it's not so much a regret, just a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And that seems like your primary exhortation to anybody that I saw in the film trailer was the idea that, yeah, basically, you know, go out without expectations, see what you find, and, you know, go from there. So yeah, that seems like good advice. And my wife and I are actually taking our first unplanned tour this summer. Every time before, I'm a details guy. I love going out and, you know, like saying, there's going to be a campground here, there's going to be water there. You know, we can budget exactly this much for the whole experience. But it seems like that does kind of rob you of the happy accidents that happen when you're out there and you have time for that to occur.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's in it, you know, on a small scale and on a large scale, it stops you being as flexible as, I mean, let's face it, a bicycle is an independent mode of transport, and it does give you this ultimate kind of flexibility and freedom to go anywhere on your own schedule and at your own speed. So why put a structure around that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit about the route that you ended up choosing then, because it sounds like you did not do what you planned to do, but you did go a long ways. You spent a lot of time on the road. How much time, and what was your general route?
So the original route was across Europe and Asia, down to Australia, and then up South America and North America and back to the UK. I got as far as Armenia, and when I say that, most people have no idea where Armenia is, so I have to explain. And Armenia is kind of east of Turkey, so it's out of Europe, it's partway into the Middle East, but it's a pretty small kind of fringe nation that not many people are really aware of.
Okay.
It's a Christian nation, it doesn't really fit with the Middle Eastern stereotype at all. But after 8 months of cycling from England, that's where I found myself, and that's where I met the girl who changed my life. And that's where the drama started, I suppose. Up until then, it had just been me and my buddy being pretty stubborn and just kind of plugging away.
Right.
With our plan. And so as a result of the kind of the upheaval, I suppose, I changed my plans completely, and I went to the place which was, I guess, the most scary place I could think of going, which was to go to Africa and the Middle East on my own.
Yeah.
Without my buddy. He'd kind of had a similar kind of reassessment, and he'd gone off on his own, and so I was there with my bike on my own. I decided my experiences have taught me that I shouldn't be afraid of the things that I was brought up to be afraid of, or that culturally, you know, I've been told that I should be afraid of. So I wanted to go and kind of demolish those fears, that paranoia.
That's fantastic.
In the most, you know, in the most blunt way possible, which is just to throw myself on my own at the Middle East and at Africa on a bicycle and without any planning and without any maps, and just go and see what kind of happened.
So does
I'm
this,
still here today.
Yeah. So. Does this go against, like, the grain of your own personality? Like, are you a details guy? Do you like to have things planned out? Was it a big sacrifice to abandon all these plans, or was it kind of easy to do? Was the planning more stressful than the free form?
I'd say once I realised that the planning was totally unnecessary, it became extremely liberating and really empowering to not have any plans, but yet at the same time to be confident that was absolutely and that you know, not and that waking up every morning and having no idea where I was going to be spending the night was actually meant that I, you know, I could do anything I chose and I could take any opportunity that came my way, and you know, that ended up being much, much better than the previous way I've been doing things, which was my personality before, I think.
Yeah. And how about your family? Like, were you raised kind of to plan for all those things, for the contingencies, and to kind of have a backup plan and all that, or was that was it not that big of a change for you?
Not so much. I mean, no, I wouldn't say that. I mean, my parents always encouraged me to do what I felt was right. So, and they never, even though they might disagree with a lot of the stuff I ended up doing, they didn't ever try to stop me. They didn't ever try to shape the way that I did it. So. It wasn't that much of a... It was a very long and gradual process of learning rather than a kind of snap adjustment, I think, because that 8 months cycling through Europe and heading off through Turkey and all that kind of thing, I learnt all these things on kind of cumulatively over a period of 8 months. And so when I went to the Middle East and Africa, it was more a case of putting what I'd learned into practice than suddenly switching from one way of doing things to another overnight.
Maybe now's a good time to introduce you. You're here with your brother, and I actually forgot your name, so I'll have to ask it again in earnest.
My name's Ben, and I am Tom's younger brother. And, yeah, me and Tom are undertaking our own cycle trip now.
And how long is the trip for you guys? What are you planning this time around?
We're taking a couple of months to cycle from Canada to Mexico, basically down the Pacific coast. Sticking largely to the 101, but we have taken a slight detour to Portland, and here we are. So,
yeah, Portland's a fantastic town. I'm glad you guys made time for it. It's one of those. It's not Amsterdam, and everybody kind of holds that up as the golden standard. But it's a good place to be. So I'm glad you guys made it in. We should probably talk about that trip too, and what you're anticipating coming up. But I was curious, just as far as being out in the middle of nowhere. You've got some fantastic shots in the film. It looks like of gravel roads, dirt roads, places with no vegetation, just being out in the absolute middle of nowhere. What did you learn when you were out there?
Goodness, I haven't really thought about that. Sounds silly, but I haven't. I guess having successfully got myself across the Sahara Desert, the Eastern Sahara Desert, through Sudan, Egypt, Ethiopia, on non-existent roads, I guess having successfully done that has taught me that what I was capable of way more than I thought I was, and I think that's probably true for pretty much everybody. The fact that I didn't give myself any options about whether I would be able to do it or not, if you know what I mean, it's like failure was not an option. I just had to go and do it. I didn't have a cell phone or a map or a GPS or any kind of backup whatsoever. So it was do it or sit on the roadside or the side of the trail or in the sand crying until some guy in a pickup truck comes along and takes pity on me, which the same end result would be just, you know, to get out of that place. So better to do it under my own steam. Maybe those kinds of situations aren't quite as inhospitable and bad as we think they are, because people often assume that if you're out on the roads, you're on your own. But you're never on your own if you're on the road, because a road's there for a reason. It's to get people from one place to another, and that means that if you're there, there's going to be more people there sooner or later, and anyone help you if you need it that badly, and anyone in any country. So even more so in that part of the world, in fact, I'd say. So it's never quite as, you know, remote, isolated, and dangerous as people expect, I think.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me how technology can separate us from each other. Like the kinds of experiences that you have when you're not depending on a cell phone, you're not depending on being able to talk to someone. It's very interesting, the dynamic between those, and how dependent I think most of us in Western culture have become on a machine, you know, to connect us with people that we want to be connected with and keep us apart from the people that we don't. So, sure. Yeah, it's very interesting. So you went without a cell phone. Was that a big stretch for you, or was that easy as well?
No, I never wanted to travel with a cell phone. I didn't want any, you know, kind of strings attached, I suppose. I didn't want any support of any kind. And obviously there's internet cafes. I would find an internet cafe once every couple of weeks in a small town. So it wasn't that I was totally off the grid, but I was as good as off the grid while I was actually on the bike.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely. What would you describe as some of your lowest points? What were some of the most trying experiences that you had?
When I first arrived in the northern part of Sudan on the ferry from Egypt, the ferry being the only way to get from Egypt to Sudan, when I first arrived there and I was faced with this kind of emptiness and a set of tar trails going off into the sand and no real idea what I was going to find for the next, you know, 700 miles of desert, I was a little bit like, yeah, I felt something I haven't felt before, and I think it was kind of disabling in a way. I set up my tent and I was just wandering around in the sand wondering what the hell I was doing, kind of thing. And that lasted for one evening, and I went to sleep. And when I woke up in the morning, I felt a lot better, because it was obvious that there was only one thing that I could do, and emotion really didn't have anything to do with it, and that was just to get on the bike and keep going. So put all emotion aside, kind of thing, and just go for it.
Just gives you time to acclimate, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that was the first time when I felt that I literally had yeah, I was totally outside my comfort zone, completely and utterly. It wasn't a gradual thing. It was a sudden jump from being in Egypt, which is very populated, very hospitable, and very easy to travel in, to being in northern Sudan, which, as far as I knew, was just nothingness for a very, very long distance and period of time. It didn't turn out to be like that. It turned out to be even more hospitable than Egypt, and probably one of the most memorable places I've ever been in terms of local encounters and that kind of thing. But that first night in the desert was pretty unnerving.
I would imagine that it's the sort of thing, especially like if it's not something you've done before, it's easy to feel like you really are out in the middle of nowhere with nothing to support you at all. I'm curious, just when you returned to Western culture, like when you got back to cities and you got back home to see family, that sort of thing, was there a big period of readjustment? Was it difficult to get used to being where you came from?
It wasn't really, because since I left in 2007, I've never been back to anywhere kind of as a thinking this is my return, this is a permanent return. I've been on the road more or less since 2007 up until today.
I see.
And nowhere I've been has been somewhere that I am gonna, you know, I feel as I'm going to stay permanently.
Okay.
Whether that be, I mean, I've lived in various places for a period of months. I lived in London for 6 months. That was more of an experiment with a city that I'd never been to than anything else. You know, I'd never lived in London. I'm from the Midlands of England. I'm from a small village. I don't know anything about this place at all.
Sure.
So that was a kind of semi-travelling experiment almost. The same in Armenia, where I ended up living for more than a year. Again, I wasn't necessarily planning to stay there permanently, so it was an opportunity to travel in one place almost, to like explore one place in more depth.
Yeah, it's nice to give yourself that opportunity as well. There are so many things, so many nuances and so many subtleties to every city and every place in the world that you could spend your entire life digging up new nooks and crannies in one place if you wanted to. And exactly. So, multiply that with however many places and cities you've been to, and that's just, there's so much to learn, so much to explore.
Yeah, yeah. I used to take really long breaks. I mean, this is a great example. We've been in Portland for 8 days, which is way longer than we expected to stay here, but it's a great place. Why not? Maybe, you know, I won't cover quite as many miles down the roads as I wanted before I head back to my to England. But you know, what's more, is it any less valuable for that reason? Probably not.
Right.
And yeah, I'd say in that ride across Europe, it took 8 months, but I'd say 2 months of that in total was probably spent in cities, chilling out and exploring.
Yeah, and it seems too like the places that you won't be able to come to again quickly are the places that it would be heart-wrenching to leave before you'd seen what you wanted to see. Yeah. Like if you had a deadline or if you had a plane to catch or something like that, that would be tearing you away from what you wanted to see far before you were ready for it. So, yeah, that really is nice to have the open-ended schedule.
Sure.
Well, maybe we should talk a little bit about what you guys are doing with the West Coast trip. And this sounds like it's also going to be an open-ended, like, you know, seeing what you want to see and that sort of thing.
It's open-ended in one respect. I do have a flight book back to England because I have a lot of work to do with this documentary in terms of publicising it and getting the word out there. But what I do in those 2 months is entirely open. Like, I have a flight back from LA. If I don't make it to LA on the bike, it's not a big deal. I'll just get on a bus or whatever.
Right.
If we decide to go on a complete massive detour, if we decide to, I don't know, head in a completely different direction, why not?
Kansas, perhaps.
Yeah, why not?
And for you, is this the first time you've done a long-distance bike tour?
This is the first long-distance bike trip I've done, yeah. We have actually been talking about this since Tom left in 2007, so it's nice to finally actually get on the road and do it.
Long time in the making, then.
Long time in the making, and now it's happening, and it's very exciting to be actually on the road and, you know, not knowing where we're going to be staying every single night, really, until we got to Portland, of course. And just being on the road again is a great experience.
Yeah.
Broadening.
It sounds like this is the first time you've traveled in America as well?
That's right, yes. The first time I've been to this continent.
It's not a bad continent, but it's probably not nearly as cool as the places you've already been. So.
I was going to say, I went to Disney World when I was 10, but that doesn't count, does it?
And they've got those all over the world. Yeah. Adele and I did the big trip back in 2009. We went from the Canadian border to the Mexican border. We never actually left the country because I didn't have a passport at that point. But we covered everything else in between, and that was, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That was down the coast.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We ended up, I think we did it in 6 weeks, yeah. Something like
Which
that.
Was slow for sure. Most people.
So. Nice
yeah. It was great, yeah. Yeah. It took our time.
But I highly recommend it, and it seemed like the pace that we were taking, there were actually people on the road that we would travel with kind of, you know, in packs, or like we'd see them at the same campgrounds every night for, you know, like a week or 2 weeks at a time. And so we kind of started building these small little communities and that sort of thing along the way. So.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, that's already started happening to us. We met these two other cyclists outside a supermarket, as you do.
In Raymond, Washington, yeah. We met them, yeah. Two guys from Washington State called Aaron and Nick. And it was funny. It was a very rainy afternoon. And the lunch stop we were supposed to be taking, an extended lunch stop, actually didn't happen because the cafe closed 5 minutes after we set up our laptops.
Oh.
So I personally was very annoyed. Because I was looking forward to spending a few hours drying off, and so we went to the supermarket, and all of a sudden Tom veers off to the left, and he spotted these two touring bikes, and an hour later we'd broken into some campsite. Yes.
That's fantastic,
where
yeah.
Where is Raymond? Is that on the Olympic Peninsula?
It's down, kind of. It's down from Aberdeen.
Yeah, yeah. NPL, I believe, is close by.
Okay.
It's one of those small, funny-sounding town names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fairly remote.
Yeah, Washington is one of my favorite places to bicycle around. Maybe being from there, kind of, you know, I have a little bit of a bias towards it. But yeah, but I enjoy it a lot. What are you guys looking forward to seeing on the way south from here?
Everybody we meet tells us the Oregon coastline is stunning. So I guess we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I've got some friends in San Francisco and some more friends and extended family in LA. So. That's for me, that's a really important aspect of the trip as well, is the social side of things, especially when there's family, extended family involved and old friends, things like that. The life on the road, it's simple. That's why I'm doing this, really.
Yeah.
So nothing, no specific things. I've never been a sightseer, so whatever comes along.
It's easier that way.
Random encounters, you know, camping, being outdoors, getting exercise, good food, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. I was trying to think of, like, as far as, like, staying outside, staying in hostels, that sort of thing, are you guys mixing it up, or do you prefer one over the other?
We've been camping so far, and I generally camp everywhere, like, camp wild, basically.
Yeah.
We found a lot of campsites that are still closed for the winter, and they seem to provide excellent hitches at a very reasonable price.
Very good price.
Very good price.
Yeah.
Good price.
We were thinking of, like, camping today, and there's all these options out, you know, out by the Clackamas River that are closed, but they'd be free if you're on a bike.
Yeah, we camped in this one. It was called Bruceport, and it was on top of a hill, and it overlooked the water, and there's this huge wooden shelter, which I guess would generally be used for communal gatherings, sing-alongs, everything. It was Tom and I and our two friends, Aaron and Nick, we met, and we just cleared this place out, and we set up our own camp, and we had a huge fire, and we had the most elaborate camp dinner ever, and it was a great night. We didn't even use the tents. We just, you know, set our sleeping stuff on the floor, and brilliant, and free.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, one of the best things is that traveling by bicycle affords you an amount of stealth that you don't get when you're traveling by auto.
Yes.
Like, if you're out with a car or a van or a truck or whatever, if you're on the road with four wheels, it's a lot harder to hide that, and it's a lot harder to put it in the bushes or something. But if you have a bicycle, a lot of places that are traditionally closed to people and officially closed are still accessible, and you can still be there, you know, without too many people knowing that you're there.
Yeah.
And, of course, we wouldn't recommend that at the Sprocket Podcast because that's illegal, and we cannot advocate for that sort of behavior, but it's very simple. It works out very nicely a lot of the time. So
this was actually a story I completely made up on the spot. It's not even true.
Yeah.
Just so everybody understands that. It's a hypothetical situation. Yes.
Someone like you, but legally distinct from you.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll have till Memorial Day, like end of May, and then that's when they all open. You have to pay for
right.
I think we're going to be in LA by the end of May, I would say. So
there we go.
Yeah, and then we're going to be staying with extended family probably by then anyway.
Yeah.
So
smooth sailing then. That's good.
When I go home, Ben is going to carry on down into Mexico on his own.
Is that right?
So I'm pretty jealous of that. I think he's going to have a bloody good time.
Yeah. I mean, maybe with it being open-ended, it's hard to say kind of what you're planning on doing, but what are you thinking about? What have you heard about Mexico that you're interested in so far?
Well, it's funny. Every single person we speak to tells me I'm going to get brutally murdered.
Most likely so.
Most of them are Americans.
Yeah,
I personally think that most people are, and most people I've met, they're pretty normal people, and all they want is the same thing as everybody else. They just want to be warm and have good food and have friends and family around them, so we'll see. But I don't speak any Spanish. But the plan is to go down Baja and then jump across to the sort of the main part of Mexico. And I live in Vancouver, BC, so I'm thinking of flying back from Puerto Vallarta to Vancouver. And should take a little bit of time and, you know, lots of tacos, burritos, enchiladas, quesadillas, many cervezas.
There you go. Yeah. That's my favorite. That's my personal favorite part about the culture down there. Yeah.
So you're not worried about not speaking Spanish?
Yeah, the question about language can be. I was going to ask both of you that, actually, especially you being in other places as well, Tom. But you first, Ben.
I speak some German, so it's not going to get me very far in Central America. I do have a phrase book with pictures in it, and I'm sure I will pick up some Spanish. I mean, I know how to order beer, which is very important.
Right, well, that perhaps primary importance.
Yeah, primary importance. apart from that, I'm a blank canvas, but we'll see. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. Well, that's a canvas that can be filled, then. How about for you, Tom, as far as language and whatnot? You went through several cultural boundaries and barriers, and I can't assume that you spoke all of the languages in the places that you passed through. So what?
Well, I'm English, so clearly no. I'm a typical Brit in that I'm extremely useless at foreign languages. So I didn't really speak any of the languages that I came across. But then should that stop you from doing a trip? Probably not. And I found that it wasn't really a problem. Communication wasn't a problem. Because you learn very quickly that body language and miming and just kind of getting by with nonverbal communication can get you pretty much everything that you need on the road. And that was absolutely fine for most of the time that I was travelling. And I think that people should bear that in mind if they're thinking about travelling. If they think that's the problem, that's something that's going to hinder their plans, then I don't, they shouldn't worry about that, because you get by out of necessity. And if you're linguistically talented, then you might pick up some of the language as well. And I'd be very jealous of you if you did so. another point is that after I'd been travelling for nearly 3 years, I just started to get quite... I mean, I could get by, and I knew that, but I could never have any conversation of any depth. And when I was on my own, especially, I started to get really tiring to never be able to express myself properly, because I didn't speak the language, and I couldn't get those ideas across through sign language and through drawing pictures and all that kind of thing. So that's part of the reason I came to the States, actually, because I wanted to travel somewhere new, but also somewhere that I could communicate properly.
Definitely.
And it's also the reason that I've been taking Farsi classes in preparation for another trip I'm going to do later in the year to Iran, which will be a 3 or 4 month trip on my own around Iran, with a basic understanding of the language, which I can hopefully build on and then use, as communicate properly with people.
That'll be good. That's as far as going to Iran as a Brit is probably far better than going as an American at this point in history. So that's good. You need less luck than maybe I would if I was to do the same thing. So
sure.
That sounds exciting. That'll be a good trip.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably wrap this up. But is there anything else either of you'd like to contribute? Anything else that you wanted to say that you haven't yet?
Maybe we should talk about the documentary a little bit more. How much of that would we cover?
We talked a little bit about your experiences, but when is the film coming out? Does it have an opening date yet, or is it still in process?
So we're at the stage where we've finished producing the film. We have the master copy, and that's all done. We have a trailer, which you can see at janapar.com.
That's a good one. Janapar, and that's JANAPAR.com.
JANAPAR.com. Yeah. In terms of release, what we're doing is submitting to film festivals. So until we've been accepted into a festival and had our premiere, we can't start thinking about getting it publicly released yet. But we're hopeful that will be in the next few months. So the trailer's online, and you can very easily put your email address in and get information in the future about when it does get released. And I'm very much hoping to come back to Portland and do at least one theatrical screening in a theatre here.
Yeah,
because I think it's a great place for this kind of film. It's I think there's a lot of people here who'd be interested in the subject.
Yeah, definitely. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was the Film by Bike Festival, where they gather mostly short films around 10 minutes or less, but they show. I think this year it was a week's worth. There was five nights of films being shown over a weekend and into the next week of just things that people have captured on film and various projects related both to travel or, you know, riding the city, fictional, documentary type things. So, yeah, that this is a good town. They like seeing things about bicycles on film. So, yeah, definitely. I assume if you're opening before then, it could very well have a chance of being in Portland before next year.
Sure. Well, our plan is to do a kind of quite an organic kind of distribution with it. So, to take it on tour and do one-off screenings with myself and the director producer, kind of hosting these events and doing Q&As and things like that, rather than trying to get it broadcast on big networks and, you know, put out for general release in theatres, because we don't think that's the kind of film it is, really.
Right.
Yeah. So. Fingers crossed, we'll definitely be back here for sure.
Definitely, yeah. Well, we look forward to the release. That's good. And once again, it's jennapar.com.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you also have, I believe, linked from that website is your own travel blog. Mm-hmm. And because I only found out we were talking last night, I haven't had a chance to read it myself. But I'm looking forward to looking into your travels and following you guys as you go from here. So,
Yeah. That's pretty easy to find. It's tomsbiketrip.com.
Couldn't be simpler.
Yeah. I've been running that for about 6 years. And hopefully of some interest to the traveller and non-traveller alike.
Fantastic, thank you. Ben, for you, anything else you'd like to kick in before we close out?
Yeah, I mean, I would just like to say that anyone who's listening who's thinking of doing a bike trip and is umming and ahhing about it, then just do it, because it is the greatest experience. And don't be scared to just, you know, step out your front door and get on the bike, really, because you will not regret it, I guarantee you that.
Excellent. Well, thanks to both of you for making the time to be here and talk today.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program. Send us your suggestions for anything you'd like us to talk about, anything you'd like us to drink, or anyone you'd like us to have on the show. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 503-847-9774. We can put it on the program for you. Or you can text message us at that same number, 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. He's on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. Keep listening, and we'll see you next time on the Sprocket Podcast.
That the train may be sounding a bit more before it leaves. I might want to give it a minute.
I'm gonna edit that out later.
Well, yeah, we'll cut it. We'll cut it down to. We'll make you sound as good as possible. I promise. I actually did an interview with a guy at a coffee shop in Boston over December, over Christmas break, and I thought a coffee shop would be a good quiet environment, but it turned out to be like one of the most populous cafes in Boston. People are coming in and going all the time. It's small, close space, and the espresso machine is constantly like whack, 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 you know, and all that stuff. So it's, I'm still trying to figure out how to do the remote interview thing. I get better, I think. It sounds like the train has passed, so. Seriously, you have, there we go. Is it wireless, too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's self-contained, so it's.
That's fantastic.
It's
there we go. Oh, that's great.